You're listening to the Mission 6-8 podcast. For more info, visit mission68.org.
Good evening, everybody. That was kind of a pretty timid reaction there. You guys obviously were emotionally moved during that clip, I can tell. That's a great little line in there when she says, who am I? We ask ourselves, who am I? I mean, how profound a question, how core a human question is that question? Some of us are still trying to answer that question, who am I? I know being the parent of three sons, when each of our boys were born, who are now a little bit older than these pictures, but I can remember, let me ask you men, how many of you men were present when one of your children were born? A lot of you guys were. Way to go. I'm sure your wives are grateful that you were there, for the most part. Some of us aren't very helpful. How many of you women were there when one of your children was born? It's a whole different buy-in, isn't it? I mean, let's just be honest. I can remember when each one of these guys were born, and I can remember our firstborn son, Luke, who's on the left-hand side. When he was born and the doctor handed him to me and he was working, stitching up Judy, and I rocked him for about 20 minutes, all of us remember those moments, and the meaning of those moments is almost right on the other side of language, because it's something miraculous just happened, something unbelievable just happened, something far bigger than us just happened. And if you're anything like me as a dad, when those kids were born, I was struck with, oh my gosh, who are you? And why are you here? And what is my responsibility as your father to help you figure out who you are and why you are here? And, you know, the Apostle John has this great line in the book of 3 John where he says, I have no greater joy than to see my children walking in truth. And I think of each one of my sons, and we think of all of our kids, wherever they are and whatever they're doing. You know, we're all after kind of helping them embrace two truths. The very first truth is the truth of the faith. Because when you ask the question, who are you? I mean, those of us who know the Lord, we recognize, wait a second, my core identity, at my core. Like if you were to ask me when I was in junior high school, well, who are you? Well, I'm the fat kid who sat in the back row who no girls would pay attention to. It's a painful time. I grew up a little bit, and then you'd say, well, who are you? Well, I'm Dave and Mona's son. I'm Betty's brother. I'm Brian's brother. And then, later on in high school, well, who are you? Well, I'm a basketball player. I'm the guy who owns that tricked out green Volkswagen Bug. You know, I'm the guy who's dating that cute blonde. I mean, there's a lot of identities, but obviously what we want all of our kids to understand is that at their core, the first truth is that they are a child of God. And the Apostle John says, I have no greater joy than to seeing my children, walk in truth. And there's something special. I was in a church a couple weeks ago, and they baptized about 12 kids who were like 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. And just sitting there watching that happen, man, that was a sweet experience. There was a sense of joy. And we have joy. And so let's say that our children get clear on the fact that they are a child of God and they trust Jesus and they're learning to walk with him. Then the next question becomes, who are they? I mean, really, who are they? What is it? Who are they going to become? How do we help them sort themselves out to figure out how they touch planet Earth? And as all three of my sons grew up, now Luke is now 32 years old and he's a chef. And Landon, our middle kid, is 28. He's a chiropractor in Dallas. And Logan, our third-born, is in sales. He works for the Hyatt in Southern California in San Diego. By his own admission, he is living the dream. Looks out of his window to see if it surfs up at Ocean Beach every day. And I'm not resentful or bitter towards him. And, every one of these guys is different. Luke, our firstborn, he was your classic firstborn in many ways, in that he's what I call a wall slammer. He's a kid who's learned almost everything the hard way. Did any of you slam into walls when you grew up? How many of you learned that way? You were like the wall slammer. Will you just call your parents tonight and apologize one more time? And honestly, Luke, listen, we raised Luke with Dr. James Dobson's picture on his wall. We did everything we could, and you're kind of with your firstborn, you kind of inflict yourself on your firstborn as a parent. You do everything you can, but there's not a lot of leeway. You're, pretty strict. And one of the most painful days for us with Luke was the day when he was 15 and a half and he got arrested for possession of marijuana on the high school campus while I was planning a church. Those were happy times. That was really a painful time for Luke, especially for us as a family. And I can just say tonight that I know what it's like to feel totally lost as a dad. And I had a little over a year with my oldest son where I was lost. And I did a lousy job fathering. So if any of you are feeling a little lost tonight, here's at you. I know what that feels like. And I'm really glad, and he's really glad that he's 32 today, and we have a fantastic relationship, and he's thriving. He's been married for 4 years, and life's good. Our middle kid is a very interesting kid. He grew up, he was a really heavy junior high kid. He is graced by God with a deep melancholy temperament. When he was in middle school, we'd kind of have to engage him in the morning and bring him into his day, or he would ruin our day and everyone else's day. I don't know if you have one of those blessings. Now, add to that Landon's deep melancholy that he is ADHD, if you know what I mean. And he also has dyslexia, which means he can't read hardly at all. Unbelievably bright. But my wife, Judy, who will be out at the resource table later, she read Landon all of high school. Think about that. Some of you help your kids with homework. Judy read him all of high school. He graduated with a 3.7 GPA, scholar athlete, went on to college and got his degree. Judy said, I'm not going to college. I've been there. And he went on and figured that out. He thought, if I sit by cute girls, I can get good notes and we can get this thing done. I said, that's my boy. So, you know, $90,000 later, he got his degree. Can I get a witness from the family? Thank you very much. I see that hand. Yeah. And then he went on to get his doctorate, which was an incredible thing, and I'll tell you more about that later. Logan, our third born, he is your classic third born. Most third borns are born with this life philosophy. Life is a party. I am the guest of honor. And he is, man. He's got a big life. He was a straight-A student, and he was homecoming this, and he's an unbelievable natural athlete. He was PSV Eindhoven, a premier soccer team in the Netherlands, saw him when he was 15 and a half years old, the world talent scout, and invited him over to train with them for 3 weeks. And he's traveled the world playing soccer, and, you know, he's just, he's got it all going on. He's got a big life. And one of the tremendous joys as a dad is obviously as a parent, as a church, as people who love our kids, we pray for them and we hope that they'll get clear early on concerning their core identity of who they are, that they are a child of God. But then the next thing we got to figure out is, okay, now, how do I engage this kid in a relationship and in a process that over time I can help this guy or girl, this young man, this young woman, sort out who they are and figure out what is the life that God's calling them to live and how does their life touch planet Earth in the future? And what's very cool is to see each one of my boys in vocations that are uniquely distinct to who they are and to see each of them have these King David experiences. Where, you know, King David has a moment of lucidity one day, and he says, Lord, you did weave me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. And then he says, my soul knows it very well. I mean, if we were just going to ask ourselves, how many of us feel like deep within us, our soul knows very well who God has made us to be. We know our strengths. We know our talents. We have clarity, and we're touching the planet from that place. I mean, what an incredible gift to give a kid. What an incredible thing to get alongside of a kid and feel prompted by God as the Lord says, listen, you get on the team of that kid and you bring the best you've got. You bring your A game, you know, to help that kid grow and develop. You help that guy or girl sort themselves out. You track this stuff. You feed back. You interact with them. And help. Hopefully they will begin to hear your voice and the truth, the voice of God and the voice of their own inner world of who God's made them to be, and they'll begin to live into that instead of all the nonsense and cultural roles that they're told by so many people today. And so for 32 years, I have had this low-grade obsession to study my sons, to help sort them out, to see them live into the life, not that I want them to live, but the life that God's given them to live. I'm not trying to manipulate or control them. We're trying to help them discover. So this fires me up, this stuff does. And I know all of you are here tonight, and God has tapped you on the shoulder, and he said, you get on the team of that kid. I played basketball in high school and college. One time my coach came to me and said, Webster, Friday night is the hinge game of the season. I don't want your C game, man. I need you to bring all that you've got Friday night. And so, you know, as a young athlete, 19-year-old kid, and a coach steps into you and speaks into your heart, you bring all that you have the next thing, if you have any kind of conscience at all. And I think if the Lord could walk around tonight, he'd look into all of our faces in a non-shaming, condemning way. But I think he would say, hey, listen, let's just get clear from the front. I don't want your C game when it comes to kids. I don't want your B game. I want you to show up and give your A game. So for 32 years as a dad, I've invested. And then for 20 years, I directed student ministries where I was responsible to mentor groups of young leaders. So for 20 years, I had a chance to mentor hundreds of young leaders from high school and young college leaders and to help them sort themselves out. And this is just one sample group of 12 guys that I mentored 1 year who oversaw a student ministry of about 1,600 students. These guys were all volunteer, and they were just an extraordinary group. And I could go around and tell you where these guys are today. You know, Jeff over there on the right, he's got three children. He teaches high school. He's a coach. Scott works for an organization in the city that I live in. He kind of does property management. Tony Schwartz is a director of a junior high ministry in Las Vegas. He has 1,000 kids. Jeff Howell, next to him in the muscle shirt, is the chief of his fire department. Wally, a couple of guys over, runs a kind of a landscaping business. Don Graffam, center in the middle, he's an associate pastor at a church in Wisconsin. And I could just, you know, go all the way around. One of the guys up there is deep into the gay community and totally lost. I mean, that kind of thing happens. And so for 20 years, I was very interested in how in the world do you get next to kids and help them sort themselves out. For the last 17 years, I've been involved in life process work. I've been involved in helping leaders on all different levels sort themselves out to figure out who are you, what is the life God's calling you to live. I've done 160 intensive one-on-one life plans with leaders over the last 15 years. And so I think a lot about this, man. This is like weird for me. I mean, this is where my mind goes when I'm most myself. I try to sort things out. And we recognize today that many students are not getting the kind of engagement from adults. I think of how many kids that went through the student ministry that I directed years ago. I'm thinking of one young girl named Beth. She was 15 and a half years old. She came, cute little, you know, dark-haired girl, lots of gifts in the arts and stuff like that, but there was something under the surface of her life that just felt uneasy. So over time, she started to trust our leadership, and one day I was sitting down with her, and she opened her heart, and I said, Beth, are you doing okay? And she said, yeah, I'm doing okay. She said, I'm really clear on my goals for my life. I said, what are your goals for your life? She said, I want to become like mad successful. Man, I want to climb in the marketplace. I want to make a lot of money, and I want to be successful. I said, that's great. She said, well, I don't know if it's great or not. So why would you question that goal? She said, maybe the reason I want to be successful. I said, all right, give me the backstory. She said, Dan, my mom has agoraphobia. She never leaves the house. She hates her life. My dad hates his life too. And rather than man up and face it and grow and become optimistic in life, what he does is he barfs on me every morning. Every morning when I leave the house, he reminds me that I am an ugly bitch slut. This is the feedback I get from my dad. My life goal is to become successful so when my dad is on his deathbed, I can walk up and lean into his face and raise my middle finger and say, screw you, Dad. You were wrong. I am somebody. She said, is that a bad motivation? I said, I've heard better. And you know what, folks? With all of the people that engaged her and loved her and cared for her, we could not penetrate that pain. All the times we prayed, it was just one of those sad things. I saw her at about age 21, 22 in a restaurant. Years later, and I walked by, and she was decked out in a really nice business suit. And I said, hey, good to see you. How are you doing? She said, I'm climbing. I said, oh, man, same motivation? She said, like, the heat is just more intense. Ugh, you know. And I just thought, what would happen if her dad would have thought a little bit different? When Landon, my middle kid, was 14 years old, he comes to me one day, and he says, Dad, I want to go out for sports. I want to kind of, like you said, Dad, turn loose the athlete within me. He said, but I got to get fitter, so will you take me into the weight room and teach me how to lift weights? I said, yeah, of course I will. And obviously, looking at me, you can see why he asked me. So we go into the gym. He lays down on a bench, and an Olympic bar weighs 45 pounds with no, you know, plates on either side. He lays down. He can barely bench press the Olympic bar. I'm not kidding you. He's grunting and groaning. And so I'm watching him, and so we begin to work, and I begin to teach him kind of proper weightlifting techniques and all that kind of stuff. So 3 years later, after his 17th birthday, we go into lift. And I say, Lennon, put a plate on both sides, a 45-pound plate, 45-pound plate, 45-pound bar, which is 135, thank you. Do your warm-up set. So I go to get a drink of water, and he knocks off 10 like an NFL linebacker. I'm not kidding you. I walk back, and I lay down. He says, your turn, Dad. And I was, I don't know if I was getting a cold or or what, but I begin, really, on like number 7, I'm grunting and groaning, and he's chiding me, the father who gives him life, his very existence. And he's saying, fat old man, push, grunt, come on, you can do it. So he spots me on the last one. I put it up, I stand up, I said, Landon, come here. So he walks over to me, I said, there's something I need to say to you. And he thinks I'm angry at him. I said, this is a great day. He says, great day? What are you, celebrating getting old and fat? I said, no, you don't get it, do you, dude? He goes, I guess I don't, Dad. I said, Landon, do you remember 3 years ago when we came in here and you laid on that very same bench and you could barely bench press the bar? He stopped, he looked at me, he said, yeah, I remember that. I said, you don't know it, but that day I set as a goal for you, I cannot wait. Like one of the first goals is I want to get this kid stronger than me. I said, we're there. This is a great day for me. And he's 17, so he's doing one of these. Really? I said, I can't wait until I just follow you around the weight room and I have to take plates off just to lift with you. And man, we are way by that. I mean, he's a beast today. If I had a body like him, I'd be a nudist. Can I say that, Mike? Is that okay? I'm in trouble. So listen, the whole mentality of Kid Unique Adults is, listen, we want our kids to get clearer and more secure and more capable and more able to win in life. And so just to begin here, I want you to team up with somebody next to you, and I want you to ask yourself this question. Who is it for you? Who is the kid? Maybe you have many, many kids, a multitude of children. But what we teach tonight, what I lead you through tonight, I want you to think of one kid. I want you to run everything we talk about tonight through the face of one child. Maybe your child, maybe a kid in a small group, could be a grandchild, could be a foster kid. I don't know who it is, a kid in your student ministry. But I want you to bring the face of one kid. The Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy, and he called him his beloved child. So that was a kid that God said to Paul, get on the team of this kid and bring your best, Paul, to help this kid grow up and get clear on who he is. And so I want you to think of who your BC is and just write that down on your hand out there. And then I want you to think about who is a person who somewhere in your past helped you find your way. Who helped you get clear on who you are? Now, before we do this, and I'm just going to give you like 90 seconds to share with each other, I need everyone to raise their right hand. I need you to repeat after me. Whatever is shared in this room tonight will stay in this room tonight. Thus fulfilling the holy Las Vegas rule. All right, you get the point. Whatever is shared, we want to, you know, protect each other. So I want you just to take a moment, and I want you to write that down in your handout, and then share with the person next to you a person who helped you, and who is the kid you're thinking about tonight? Who's your BC? Go ahead. You got 1 minute left. Do it quickly. Okay, how many of you immediately someone came to your mind that has helped you find your way in your past? You knew who that person was immediately. How many of you really struggled and you thought, I'm not really sure who, look at that, isn't that something? Wow. Let me give you a little background into the thinking of Kids Unique. A lot of things have contributed in my life, you know, this 32 years of being a dad, this 20 years of student ministry, 17 years of life process, work with leaders, kind of all cascaded into this thing. And I've thought about this a lot. There is a school district in Naperville, Illinois, called School District 203. They are the fittest group of kids in America. On average, in school districts across the country, there are 35% of our kids that are out of shape, overweight. Another 35% are on the cusp. In Naperville, 98% of the kids are physically fit based on national standards. And the reason is because they do PE in a whole different way. Every kid can get an A in middle school or high school in Naperville School District 203, these 19,000 kids, because you get your grade in physical education based on the number of minutes you aerobically exercise in your target heart range. So every middle school and high school has an aerobic lab where they have 18 different stations that you can participate in. So all these kids are fit. What they do is they have a tri-fit computer system so kids can set goals and all that kind of stuff. So when you graduate, you come across the stage, you know, you shake the hand of the superintendent and the principal and they hand you your diploma and a 14-page document that chronicles your physical fitness goals from ninth grade to the current day. Your VO2 specs, your blood printout, you know, all of your goals, your weight, and all that kind of stuff. And included in that 14-page printout is information that helps you know, how do I live into the future and keep my brain nimble, and how do I keep my body fit? There are people that move into the Naperville School District so their kids can benefit from that. And I thought about how cool that was, and three cheers for Naperville. But I thought about how much cooler would it be, and maybe this is the romantic part of my own brain, but I think how cool would it be, you come by and you get your diploma and you get your physical fitness document, you know, and you flex your muscles, and then you get come to the next person and there is an adult who cares about you. And they hand you a document. I have like this fantasy of some cool leather-bound thing like Gandalf would hand off to his protege, you know. And inside this notebook, this letter, whatever it looks like, is a compilation of insights that have been proven to be true about you at your core. Who you are uniquely made to be. That is like a North Star that guides you into your future. I thought, how sweet would that be? And that's the vision of Kid Unique, is how cool would a document lovingly prepared by someone who is crazy about this kid be, that contains the truth of who he or she is at their core. Maybe it would look like the letter that Parker J. Palmer talks about he's going to write to his granddaughter in his wonderful book, Let Your Life Speak. He says that in those early days of my granddaughter's life, I began observing the inclinations and proclivities that were planted in her at birth. I've noticed and I still notice what she likes, what she dislikes, what she's drawn towards, what she's repelled by, how she moves, what she does, and what she says. And he says that in this letter, he's going to say, now here's a sketch of who you were from your earliest days in this world. It's not a definitive picture. Only you can draw that. But it was sketched by a person who loves you very much. Perhaps these notes will help you do sooner something that your grandfather did only later. Remember who you were when you first arrived and reclaim the gift of true self. You know, a few years back, I made a decision. I'm not going to trust my boys' teachers or coaches or girlfriends or whoever to help them understand what is right with them. The world constantly tells us what's wrong with us. And so I spent 3 days of my life, and I got away to a quiet place, and I spent an entire day thinking about Luke, an entire day thinking about Landon, an entire day thinking about Logan. And I created a letter for each one of these guys titled, What's Right With You? And I came up with 7 distinct, unique things that were right about each one of my guys, matted it down into a letter. I, you know, matted it and framed it and gave it to him on Christmas Eve. This is Landon reading his letter. Let me read you a little of his letter. Because part of the Kid Unique project is on the back end of doing this work with our children, we're able to write a letter that would be something that we would give them that would help them get clear and hang on to it. I said, Landon, without question, fathering you has been one of the best and most challenging experiences of my life. I have loved being and I still love being your dad. I know that there have been times when I've been a good and a wise father. I know there are other times when I've angered you, frustrated you, been stupid, and generally made a mess of things. Thank God for forgiveness and do-overs. Anyway, this Christmas, I sat down, I spent some time reflecting on what's right with you, what I love about you. Let me tell you 7 things that are right about you. I'll just highlight this. 1, you have a genius way of seeing things. Some may have a brighter IQ, but you have a brilliance that you possess, and I talk about that unique thing. Second, you are a hard worker. Nothing has ever come easy for you, and you've discovered that hard work gets you to where you want to be. You've demonstrated this in transforming a chubby junior high body into a model of fitness. You've shown this as you've learned strategies to compensate for your learning disabilities, and on and on and on. Third, you are brave and have the ability to bounce back. You have encountered more disappointments in life than most people. Some have been with sports, some with women, some with studies, some with unfulfilled dreams. I go on to tell them that. Fourth, you are a deep and a loyal friend. Those who know you best understand this about you. The downside is that most of your friends aren't as loyal as you are, and that hurts. But being a close, trusted friend will make you a great husband and dad one day. And another thought on this, I pity the fool who wounds a friend of yours because they just invited a boatload of trouble from you. And oh yeah, you are a good friend. And by the way, thanks for being my friend. Number five, you can dance. Dang, the boy can get a move on. Boogie Woogie is your middle name. Booty Shaking is your game. I have no idea where this ability came from, but shoot, the boy can dance. Number six, you refuse to settle. Most people set puny goals and low standards. You don't. You set high standards when it comes to fitness, friendship, and females. You also refuse to be inauthentic in your walk with God. This is a high standard. You know that if it isn't real, it isn't worth it. And number seven, you love excellence. You have a sense of what should be and can be. You want an excellent life, an excellent career, an excellent body, an excellent family, an excellent faith. And I go on and say that. And, you know, I was down seeing him. He's 28 years old, and he still has that letter sitting on his nightstand. And he has sent me letters at different times in his life, especially, this is weird, when he gets upside down with a girl he's dating. And his heart gets broken because he's so sensitive. And he has written me emails. He says, Dad, I don't think anybody gets me, but I'm so thankful that at least you understand me. And I've realized what a stabilizing force that has been in his life. And you know, just call me nuts. I actually believe that if my sons know that their dad is 100% behind them, it's actually going to make their life better. Call me crazy. And so do kids need this kind of relationship with an adult? Oh my gosh, you know, I'm trying to do 5 hours in about an hour and 50 minutes tonight, so there's a lot I'm leaving out. But there are a number of studies that are saying to us, absolutely. Guys like Chap Clark in Southern California, who's the head of student ministry and family culture at Fuller Seminary. He did an 8-month sabbatical. He spent 6 months on Crescenta Valley High School's campus. He went and he said, I just want to substitute teach for free. And his 15-year-old kid went to the high school. And the faculty welcomed him on the campus. He said, but what I want to do is I don't want to teach geometry or geography. He said, I want to interview students for 6 months and I want to understand how they really feel about all these different issues in life, love, sex, money, God, parents, the future, all this kind of stuff. So for 6 months, he sat at Crescenta Valley High School in classroom after classroom, and these kids started to trust him, and they started to open their hearts to him. And Chap's 15-year-old son said to his dad, Dad, now I think that you think you really understand what's going on with guys my age these days. And his son said, you don't have a clue, Dad. And Chap said, son, I have been teaching family system for 3 decades, well, twice the length of your life. And his kid said, yeah, well, we'll see. And Chap was humble enough in his book titled Hurt to say, my son was right. And the long and the short of it, of what Chap discovered getting next to kids for 6 months, is he was overwhelmed by the sense of abandonment that kids felt by the adult generation. He said it was almost wholesale that kids felt isolated, lonely, and abandoned, and hurt. One of the kids, you know, this is just a sample, said, Chap, yeah, go ahead, tell them our story, tell them the truth, that nobody cares, nobody listens, that teachers and coaches and cops and parents don't even know who we are. Tell them that and see if anybody listens. Ha, not a chance. Unbelievable, you know, some of the things that have happened there. He said even the sharpest kids who had scholarships to Stanford and Division I athletes were going. He said they all felt the same, and they don't trust adults. They feign like they do, but all they trust is their friends, and they form clusters, and they go undergrounds. No one understands me except my friends. You look at a study like Hardwired to Connect, which is a great study done by Kathleen Kubner Klein, who's a child psychiatrist, and she teaches at med school at the University of Colorado, and another guy named David Blankenhorn is the president of the Institute for Family Values. And what they did is they collected 33 distinguished children's doctors, research science, mental health, youth service professionals, and they formed a commission because they're concerned over the rising rates of mental illness, behavioral problems and emotional distress among U.S. children. With all of the money we're dumping in to programs for kids, there isn't one indicator that says we're moving ahead rather than going backwards. 1 in 4 kids today have an problem with alcohol, 21% have mental and addictive disorders, 20% seriously consider suicide. There is an Ivy League school, if I told you the name of, you'd know it immediately. Every year they do a survey of incoming freshman girls. In 1988, 1 in every 288 girls admitted cutting. In 2008, 1 in every 5 girls admitted cutting. And what they found out, what both these studies say, is they found out, listen, the brain is meant to grow in the context of a living relationship with someone who is passionately committed to their well-being. Now, does that surprise any of us in this room? Not at all. One of my heroes is Yuri Bronfenbrenner, who's the head of family at Cornell University. And a while back, Bronfenbrenner said, you want to know how to raise a healthy kid? I'll tell you how to raise a healthy kid. Every kid needs to have one adult who is irrationally interested in them. Like whacked out crazy nuts about them. Why? Because human beings understand that they have value because other people communicate value to them. And kids see their value in our eyes and our attention. A while back I talked with a guy and he said, dude, I mean, listen, I tell my kid what to do. I don't ever pay any attention to him. I said, gee, what a wonderful gift. Good for you. I bet you're rich, aren't you? No, I got a little cynical with the guy. But he's starting to see the light, and he's starting to recognize that even just paying basic attention to his son changes everything. And so all of these studies conclude that kids desperately need adults who will engage them. Therefore, a kid's unique adult develops the mindset, the will, and the courage to enter a discovery-rich relationship that's going to help that kid live into who God has made him or her to be. How in the world do we do that? Well, I'm glad you asked, because there is a four-window model that I've thought about that is kind of how I look at human relationships, especially kids. There are these four windows through which we watch our kids grow and develop, whether they're your own kids or some other kid that you're investing in. There is the observation window, which is all about unleashing the power of seeing, just opening your eyes and loving a kid enough to watch them and to study them. There is the exploration window, which is the power of discovery, of helping a kid and nudging a kid out to experience life and then monitoring their reactions to what goes on. All sorts of tells there. There is the affirmation window, which is the power of telling a kid what's right with him or her, not just what's wrong with him or her. And there is the revelation window, which is all about the power of listening and praying. And when we look through these four windows, we begin to gain perspective on a kid. And a Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist says that perspective increases your IQ 50 points, especially when it comes to helping a kid figure out who they are and how they should live. Now, our default mode of existence is to slip into passivity concerning these four windows. And we have to intentionally go through a mind shift and move ourselves from the passive zone to the active zone. You say, well, what does that look like with observation? If you are in the passive zone concerning a kid, you are inattentive to them. And we have to go through this mind shift of going from ignoring to noticing to getting to the point where I really look and study my kids. In the exploration window, no new growth opportunities. I don't open the door. I don't encourage kids out. I've got to move from limiting to creating. And when you're in the active zone, you are creating opportunities and debriefing those experiences with kids. The affirmation window is I'm negative. I only point out what's wrong. I'm always on my kid. And we got to move from just only seeing the mess to the miracle. We got to point out what's right with them. The revelation window is I'm prayerless, I'm defeated, I don't feel hope. We got to move from that to listening to God and believing that God wants to help us in the middle of this. We really do. Now, let me give you a picture of what a kid's unique adult looks like. This is Logan when he was 5 years old and a very odd woman named Miss Twyla. And Logan, when he was getting out of the water at Wollongong Beach in Australia, he did a semester abroad at the University of Wollongong. Learned how to surf, almost died a couple times and surfed way over his head. God spared his life, but that's Logan. When Logan was 5 years old, I picked him up and I put him on my shoulders. And I felt a half of a golf ball-sized lump underneath his left arm. And I had all those faith-filled thoughts and feelings like you would. Oh my gosh, my kid's going to die. He has cancer. You know, all those faith-filled things. It ended up being a benign bone tumor called an osteochondroma. They go in, they spread the muscle, they scrape the tumor off the bone. He's fine today, which we're grateful for. We had his surgery. I was on the staff of a church outside of Chicago at that time at Rush Presbyterian Hospital in the city of Chicago. It was in December. It was a Friday. There was a foot of new snow falling outside. We go into surgery at 7. He's back in his room at noon. The surgery went fine, but he's a mess. He's coming out of anesthesia. He's barfing. He's, you know, he's stinky. He's, you know, he's just a 5-year-old little mess. But he's through the surgery, which we're grateful for. So we're trying to encourage him and lift his spirits, but he has nothing to do with us. Into the room, a phone call comes, and I pick up the phone. And the woman says, "Dan, is that you?" I said, "It is." I said, "Twyla?" She said, "Yes." She said, "How is my Logan doing?" And I knew exactly what she meant, because Twyla is one of those odd ladies who was Logan's Sunday school teacher at the church that we were part of, and she was one of those ladies who engaged her responsibility as a teacher in Sunday school. She didn't do it because the senior pastor pleaded from the stage, "Please, will someone spend time with our kids? I'll give you Starbucks cards." She didn't do that at all. She believed that God had assigned those children to her. And she showed up on Sunday, and she loved those kids that way. And if you were fortunate enough to have your kid in Miss Twyla's class, you were blessed among all human beings. Really, I'm not kidding you. So when she called and said, "How's my Logan doing?" I knew exactly what she meant. I said, "Twyla, your Logan's a mess." "Didn't the surgery go well?" No. "The surgery went great, Twyla. He's just coming out. He's violent. You mean he's not smiling?" "Twyla, he had surgery." "Well, I'm coming down to cheer him up." You know, I said, "Twyla, it's Friday in Chicago. It's a foot of new snow falling outside. It'll take you forever. It'll take you an hour and 45 minutes. You don't need to do that. I'll just pass on to Logan that you called. I'm sure that'll lift his spirits." She said, "Is he smiling?" I said, "No." She said, "I'm coming." I said, "Twyla," boom, she hung up on me. An hour and 45 minutes later, I'm not exaggerating, she walks into that hospital room carrying a small white igloo cooler. And I'm thinking, cool, I could use a beer. That's just a little Michigan humor for you. She sets the cooler on the bed, comes up and pushes me off the bed, leans into Logan and looks at him and says, "How you doing, buddy?" Well, "I'm just so sorry. We have to cheer you up." "That would be nice." "Well, do you know there's a new foot of snow falling outside, Logan?" I heard. "You haven't had a chance to play in the snow yet today, have you?" "I haven't, Miss Twyla." "You haven't had a chance to hit your dad with a snowball yet, have you?" He shakes his head no. She said, "We have to change that." She grabs the igloo cooler, she opens it up, and it reveals an arsenal of freshly formed snowballs that she had made before she came up the elevator. She turns the little cooler to Logan, and she says, "Pick your weapon." And his eyes, you know, and he picks the biggest, nastiest, iciest snowball out of there and ricochets it off of my willing chest at the end of the bed, and the first smile of the day breaks out on that kid's face. And Twyla leans into him and double cheeks him. Do you know what I mean by that? Wonga, wonga, wonga. Ruffles his hair and she says, "That's better, buddy." And I'm looking at her thinking, "Who are you?" She gets Logan out of bed, wheels his IV across the hall into the pediatric playroom. And for the next 30 minutes, they play. And we're listening to them laugh. Judy and I are sitting in the room just shaking our heads. This is unbelievable. She wheels him back in, tucks him into bed, folds the covers, kisses him on the forehead, and says, "Logan, you got to get out of here. Really. Because it just is not the same when you're not there on Sunday." So I'm walking her to the elevator, carrying her arsenal. And I stopped her about halfway there. I said, "Twyla, stop for a second." She said, "What?" I said, "What you just did was amazing." She shrugged her shoulders. She says, no, it's no big deal. No, honey. What you just did was legendary. Why do you do it? And you know, like every authentic kind of kid's unique adult who's just like whacked out and just loves kids, she just said, "I don't know, I just love the kids." I said, "Well, you know, Twyla, in the words of Jesus in Matthew 23, the greatest among you shall be your servant. You're one of the great ones. And just on behalf of every parent who's been fortunate enough to have their kid in your classroom, thank you from the bottom of my heart." And I gave her a big hug. Walked her to the elevator. She steps in there. The doors close. And I'm sure she went to abuse some other innocent dad that day. And I thought, that is a kid-unique adult. Because when you look on your handout there, you will see kid-unique adults. Number one, they take this work personally. They really do. We all know that when we take something personal, it raises our level of play. There is power and courage and energy and risk when we step to the plate, and this is personal to us. We give a better performance when it's personal to us. With Miss Twyla, it was personal to her. She personally cared for every kid in her Sunday school class. The second thing that's true of a kid unique adult is they learn how to dribble with their head up. When I learned how to play basketball, one of the biggest challenges was I could possess the ball if I watched the ball. But you can't see up the floor. All the plays up the floor. And so the coach would yell, "Webster, put your head up." I said, "Well, I'm going to lose control of the ball. Do you want me to control the ball or lift my head up?" He says, "Practice, son, practice." So slowly I was able to dribble the ball and to look up the court and to make the next pass. It took coaching. It took time. Kids unique adults figure out, I have to learn how to manage my own life, dribble the ball, and then have enough margin and love and concern to be able to lift my head up the court and see kids' needs. And Twyla was able to dribble with her head up. What did she do? She managed her life well enough so that she was able to have time to come to see Logan. Third thing that's true of a kid unique adult is that they learn how to separate the mess from the miracle or the miracle from the mess. She walked in. She didn't see a stinky little vomit-covered kid. She saw the wonder of this young human being in my son, and that was very touching. She saw Logan through the nausea. And then lastly, she learned how to manage the predictable irritations of daily life. I mean, stop it. She leveraged the predictable irritations of daily life. She actually used the snow, which was an irritation to everyone else, as something that could be used. And so when you think of those four things, just kind of what's true of a kid unique adult, which one of those four characteristics of a fully engaged adult would most be true of you and least be true of you? I mean, would you say, there's no question this, I take this personally, but I have a difficult time managing kind of the daily irritations that come my way, and that kind of robs my presence? Would you say, man, I look at kids and I see the miracle, no problem. Or, no, I look at kids and I see the mess. I'm always pointing out what's wrong with my kid. Just, I hate that. Hear the voice of my mom, which I said, I'll never do this, and I'm doing it to my kid, you know. I don't know. Take a second, and I want you to underline the one that is most true of you, that you feel like, I got that one down, and then I want you to circle the one characteristic that you know, man, Lord, you got to help me with this one. I got to grow in this way. So just do that. And aren't you glad if we had more time I'd have you confessing to each other, but we don't. You get to play it close to the cuff. All right, now let's turn and let's look at this first window, the observation window. And let me help you get a handle on what it means to engage a kid. And now I'm in a relationship with a kid. I'm on a kid's team. I want to bring my resources. And what does it mean now for me to look through the observation window and engage them? The observation window is simple. It is about attentively watching the kid that we care about. I love the Anthony DeMello quote, which probably is worth circling down there, that love begins with the seeing of the other. All of you who are married, you know that your relationship begins to die when you stop seeing each other. That's trouble. And many of us have stopped seeing our kids, and we have to open our eyes to be able to see our kids. I love what Yogi Berra said, you can observe a lot just by watching. He's right. And so what do we look for? Well, we try to spend time asking ourselves, what are the likes and dislikes of this kid? What are they interested in? What are they drawn to? What upsets them? What do they do? What do they react to? What do they love? And we begin to collect insights that begin to create a profile for what this kid is like. Let me ask you this question. Think about the kid that you have in your mind. If you could go back to his or her life, maybe, you know, from like 10 years old back, and put all of the photographs you have of that kid on the table, or if you could go into their house and have their parents or their mom or their stepmom, whoever, get all the pictures they have, and you spread all those out on the table, and if I said, listen, for what you know about that kid, of who they were before they were 10, I want you to pull out photographs that would illustrate who they are. It's fascinating to me when I talk to parents and I ask them, tell me, what's your kid like? Tell me, your kid is like this, not like that. Give it to me. And every parent can say, well, my daughter's like this, not like that. But my son, he's like that and not like that. So here, let me show you some pictures of my sons. This is Luke, my oldest guy. All three of these pictures tell you something about Luke. Now, if you knew him like I know him, you would know that's true. Those three pictures would tell you just by observation, if you knew him like I do, I have seen Luke as an incredibly hard worker, and he is tough. He has these wonderful aesthetic instincts, an amazing sense of humor, and he has a huge heart relationally. In high school, he did the lighting program. He did the lights for the drama department. He was never on stage. He's always been behind the scenes. He's a chef. And he would create these lighting schemes that won four state titles in a row all 4 years he was in high school. He won the highest award. He's always been behind the scenes. So if you were to look at Landon now, look at this kid. Does that kid look secure? He looks like he's going to wet his pants. He's in the middle. I love this last picture. Now, you say, what do those things tell you about Landon by observation? If you hung around with him long enough, you would know that he is unbelievably sensitive, but he loves sports. He is a deep and a loyal friend. Oh, my gosh. And he has a genius way of seeing things. He really does. Then you take Logan, Mr. Thirdborn. Does that kid says, you know, if you come and just watch me play, you'll have a happy day. No, I'm not kidding you. Yeah. So you say, what does that say about the kid? Logan is unbelievably competitive. Oh my gosh. Some of you are familiar with the Strength Finder survey. His number one strength is competition. It's one of the things that made him an incredible goalkeeper in high school and college. He was absolutely fearless. And he is the most natural leader of our three boys, no doubt about it. He is secure, he is fun-loving, he enjoys life, and he is brave and a thrill-seek. He is the first one off the cliff if there is a cliff to jump off. And we just hope there's water at the bottom. I'm not kidding you, man. We're like Tim the Tool Man Taylor. We have an account at the emergency ward with him. It's just, he has almost died. So when you think about observing kids, you know, Jesus' mother, she saw things in the Lord, and she treasured these things in her heart. I'm reading through, that is not the book of Luke. How did that verse get there? I'm reading through the book of Genesis. Wow, that's like way off. I just noticed that. And as I read through, I came across this verse. I'll get it at halftime. When the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a peaceful man living in the tent. Just different descriptions of two different guys who kind of came at life in completely different ways. And so if we're going to get good at observation, we need to get our Sherlock Holmes on. We have to kind of develop the sleuth skills. Sherlock Holmes was a freaky dude, man. He'd see a little bit of yellow sand on someone's boot, and he'd say, well, that's from the island of Bimba Bimba, and that little insight would turn the whole case, and boom, it would be solved. And so we've got to sit down and study our kids and learn how to pay attention to things that other people don't see. If we don't do it, who will? And so here's a little sleuth training in your handout. If you were going to write this down, take a minute and say, okay, my kid is blank, not blank. Just one insight, what would you write down? And if you're going to say, my kid I know is drawn to, what might you say? Or my kid comes alive when, how would you fill that in? Or, you know, there is something that I've observed in my kid that I love, and it's this. These are all observation window insights. And then as you begin to collect those, you begin to ponder the million-dollar question, what might these things mean for this kid? And so we're going to take just a minute. I think this is valuable enough. Then we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and we'll rock through the other three windows. But I want you to spend some time right down here. And if you don't have a pencil, then just think about what you would put here. Go ahead. Okay. Obviously, I wish we had more time to really layer this thing out. But as you can, just to remind ourselves, listen, we want to move. We want to always be moving kind of left to right. We want to move from a state of inattentiveness to a state of really seeing our kids. Now, I want to let you know, given kind of the brevity of tonight's workshop, that the Kid Unique Project, the book is out there, and I want to alert you to it. The first half of the book tells you the principles that we're teaching tonight, but in greater detail. The second half of the book has a 31-day experience where really it's a 5-week experience where we're going to go through these four windows. And in the 31-day experience, the first week, there are 5 simple exercises that we give to you that you can use to kind of strengthen your observation ability. Things where you write down insights. They take like 10 to 12 minutes as you engage a kid at whatever level they are, and you record those insights. So at the end of a week, you've gotten stronger, and hopefully it begins to affect the compass in your brain for how you see your kid. You become a chronic observer, not a control freak, not a point out what's wrong freak, but you study the wonder of who this kid is. And then the 6th day, you know, in the 31-day project is a small group, if you want to go through it as a group. And then the seventh day is a personal reflection page where I ask you, what are you learning about yourself as you try to engage your kid? And then the second week is on the affirmation window. There's five simple exercises, same last 2 days. And then the third week is exploration, then affirmation, and then revelation. And then the last part is I help you figure out, now that you've developed these insights and you're getting to know your kid better because you're paying more attention, how do you write your own What's Right With You letter? And if you have a kid who's 7, that letter's going to look different than a kid who's like 18. But that's available out there. If you're interested in that, I wanted to give you a heads up on that. You have got 10 minutes. It is 8:02. In 6 minutes, I'm going to start a video clip, which will let you know, it's a little music video, that we're going to start back up. 10 minutes, because I've only got you till 9. So go out, grab a cup of coffee. The bathrooms are out there, and we'll see you back in 10. Go. All right, we got some ground to cover. Open your handbooks to the exploration window. It's my favorite window. I love this. Exploration window is when we look through the lens and we're thoroughly working hard to try to find something, and the something is, who is this kid? And the exploration window is all about developing an explorer's heart that is not invasive, it's not manipulative, but I am constantly attentive and I'm watching how my kid interacts with life. Because as your kid that you care about goes through life every day, they are bumping into life. And if we can help kids learn how to pay attention, become more self-aware to their reactions to life circumstances, there is this ticker tape of data that is flowing from a kid's inner world that if they can learn to be sensitive to it and we can learn to pay attention to it, it will give us all sorts of tells concerning who this kid is. And so we have to engage kids and encourage them to experience life opportunities, not life-destroying opportunities. And then we need to ask them what their reaction was, and we need to learn what we can from this. Now, this is Logan, our youngest kid, with his fiance Amanda, his Michigan State sweetheart. And they're getting married next Cinco de Mayo. And she's going to graduate from med school, and he's going to stay at home the rest of his life. God bless him. He's living the dream. I'm not resentful towards him at all. But when he was a senior at Michigan State, he calls me and says, Daddy, you coming to the soccer game? Of course Mom and I are coming to the soccer game. It's only an hour and a half away. Will you take Amanda and me out to get something to eat after the game? Of course we'll take you guys out to get something to eat. How many of you have college kids? You know it's never just Logan and Amanda. It's Logan and Amanda. It's Katie and Brad. It's Molly and Phil. So $140 later at Mongolian Barbecue in East Lansing, you know, after the game, we're all sitting around this round table, and Katie, one of Amanda's roommates, goes off on a rant. I mean, she just like freaks out for 5 minutes, and she says, I cannot believe it. I have spent all of my parents' money since I've been here the last 4 years, and I've spent all of my money, and I'm a senior, and I don't have a clue of what I should do with my life. Really, I mean, she just goes off. And so she finishes, we're all respecting and attentive, and she gets done, and everyone's sitting quiet around the table, and I said, Katie, she said, what? I said, do you want help with that? She said, help with what? Like knowing what you should do with your life. And she gives me one of those looks like, there's help? I said, honey, this is one of the things I do with my life. And I looked at Logan, I said, Logan, dude, this is your meal. I don't want to capitalize it, but if you give me a few minutes, maybe I can help Katie a little bit. And he said, Dad, that's fine, just don't embarrass me. So I tore off my shirt and danced on the table like any dad would, right? So here's what I said to Katie. I said, Katie, listen to me. Your greatest ally in trying to sort yourself out is your sense of self-awareness. And I give her the whole spiel of how as she's going through life, she's been to classes, she has part-time experiences, she's volunteered. She has had inner reactions to those things. Are you attentive, Katie, to how you react to life? She said, well, you know, I know when I'm bored and I think I know what I'm interested in, but I've never really thought about, like, literally paying attention. I said, Katie, let me tell you, give you a picture of this. I said, if I could bring in Jon Stewart from The Daily Show, kind of this hip, caustic Ted Koppel, you know, who's liberal and makes a lot more sense than some of our politicians, that's a whole different story. Sorry, I know, I just dug a hole, man. I should have been more disciplined. But you're not giving me any grace on that one, are you? You're just letting me suffer up here. So if I said, Katie, if Jon Stewart could come in, I said, Jon, listen, I want you to have a dialogue for 2 hours with these 6 MSU seniors. Just talk about all sorts of different things. Go in and out of lots of different topics. I said, Katie, I'll bet my house what I'm going to tell you right now will happen over the next 2 hours. There will be moments in the conversation, the dialogue, when you will be so engaged, you will be on the edge of your seat, You'll forget what time it is. You'll forget what state it is. You'll forget that I just spent $140 on this meal. You'll forget all that stuff because you'll be interested. Now, here's the weird deal, Katie. Sitting next to you is Brad. Brad was raised by parents, good parents, and he will be nodding. And he'll be nodding at you. He'll be nodding at John. And he'll be feigning interest. Because if we could see into Brad while you are fully engaged and alive, Brad inside is like this. He doesn't really care about the topic. He cares about you. So he's paying attention. Now, here's the weird deal, Katie. 20 minutes later, two topics later, Brad is fully alive, engaging, and you're falling asleep. I said, what's going on there? Why is it that, I looked at Logan, I said, why is it when we talk about competition, deal-making, entrepreneurial stuff, and winning and money, Logan wakes up? Why is it when we talk about medicine and diagnostics and biology and chemistry, Amanda wakes up? She's in med school. Why is it when we talk about kids and teaching school, Molly wakes up? She teaches in Colorado now. Why is it when we talk about architecture and beauty, Phil wakes up? Last week, he just finished his master's in architectural design in Dallas. He lives with our middle son. Why is it we talk about Big Macs? Brad wakes up. Bada bing, just giving Brad a shot. You know, I said, what's going on there? They are attentive to when they wake up. I said, Katie, here's my assignment to you. Go buy a cool notebook at Barnes & Noble's or at an art supply store. Get a pen. You like the way the ink comes off. Go get a double latte. Sit over the quad at Michigan in the library. Look over that Michigan State. And I want you to spend 2 hours tracing back through the last 4 years at MSU. And I want you to ask yourself, what are the classes that drew you into them, that called to you? And what are the classes that you didn't like? Just write down the ones that called to you. In all of your part-time jobs that you had to have to raise money, make money, you may have hated 50% of the job and liked 50% of the job. What were you doing when you liked the 50%? Write that stuff down. You volunteered over the last 4 years. What organizations did you volunteer for and why? I said, Katie, you will find life when you are at the intersection of your capability and your passion. You have to pay attention to when you wake up inside. You have to pay attention to when life is coming into you. I said, Katie, if I could move this round table out of here and bring in a baby grand piano and take the lid off the baby grand piano and put it aside. There's 88 keys on a baby grand with corresponding strings inside the body of the piano. I said, Katie, if I leaned into the body of the piano, I'm looking at the strings, and I do this, Katie, what will happen? Hey! She said, the whole restaurant will look at us. And they did, you know. I said, no, okay. What will happen inside the body of the piano is that the string that is tuned closest to the resonant frequency of the note that I shout is going to do what? It's going to resonate. It's going to vibrate. Unless someone has their foot on the damper pedal, you cannot prevent it, and there's all sorts of harmonic resonances that get really freaky. But anyways, I said, Katie, listen, here's what I'm trying to say to you, honey. I said, I believe that you have strings tuned inside of you. Now, did God, your creator, put them there? Are they there in your DNA or your early childhood experiences, the values of your mom and dad? Is it all that stuff? I don't know. I just know that they're there. And when you get around topics and causes and issues, they all send out frequencies. And in some of those, you will feel alive and you won't even know why, but it's true to your core. You got to pay attention to that. Does that make sense? We have to encourage our kids to experience life and pay attention to when they wake up. Here's an illustration. When Logan was in seventh grade, he was playing soccer. He was a midfielder at West Middle School in Howell, Michigan. Just a prolific soccer powerhouse. And we had the big game against East. So their goalkeeper on Logan's team got sick. And so the coach said, anybody want to play goalie today? So Logan said, well, he's always up for a new experience. I'll do it. He was a midfielder at that point. So he comes over and says, Dad, I'm going to fill in goal today. I said, good for you, buddy. So I take my lawn chair and I walk to the defensive end of the field, as all of us have, and we set that thing down. I sit down, I go, this will be interesting. And I couldn't believe what I saw. I watched Logan, never having any experience as a goalkeeper in soccer, anticipate the builds on the field, have this intuitive understanding of the geometry of the game, fearlessly attack the ball and get clobbered by two guys, anticipate corner kicks where he'd go out and he'd punch the ball. And then in the last 2 minutes of the game, we're up 1-0, and his defender fouls a kid in the box, so there's a penalty kick. A guy named Tyler DeLuce, a guy who played with in high school, one of the better players that's come out of Holland a long time, gets to do the kick. So I'm watching Logan, I'm thinking, he's never done a penalty kick. So he gets down, and he anticipates where Tyler's going to go, guesses correctly, and stops the shot, and he assures the win for his team. And of course, after he did that, he does his Logan dance, because that's Logan. So after the game, being a interested dad, you know, having an explorer's heart who's interested in kind of the inner terrain of my kid's world and what lights him up and what doesn't, on the drive home, I'm saying, Logan, did you have a good time today? Oh, seventh grade. Duh, you know. I said, it looked like you had a lot of fun. He said, Dad, I had a riot. I said, you look pretty comfortable out there. You've never had any training in goal, have you? No, I haven't. I said, well, how did you know when to go out and attack the ball? And how did you know when to stay back? Because you were 95% right on those just kind of intuitive moves. He said, I don't know. I just did what I thought was right. I said, weren't you afraid of getting clobbered when you had to go out and take that one high ball and two guys knocked into you and you got knocked down? He said, never thought about it. I just knew I had to get the ball. I said, okay, now, you're at the penalty kick. How did you know which way to go? He says, well, Dad, listen, I'm old enough to know. It's a guess game. But I noticed when Tyler came up to the ball, he leaned back, so I knew he was probably going to go right, so I went that way. I said, get out of here. You're seventh grade, and you read a lean? And he just did this. You obviously have your father's athletic genes. So I said to him, I said, Logan, listen to me, buddy. I think you have a gift, and I'd volunteer to play again. He never went back out in field, and he rode this thing all the way through high school and college, and it was just one illustration of one adult engaging a kid, watching them experience something, debriefing it with them, and recognizing something was really cool. When he was in Australia, look at this email that he sent me. See if this isn't a tell. He said, Dad, this has been the greatest trip of my life, and I continue learning about myself every day. Although classes are hard, the really difficult 221 subject is interesting because we are talking about all sorts of coefficients that deal directly with the stock market. What does that mean? Some of you could explain a coefficient. I have no idea. He calls me almost every week and has stock ideas for me. Logan, I'm still paying your MSU. I have no money to invest in the stock market. And he says, Dad, I know I just dig talking about this stuff. And I said, I dig talking to you, so keep calling me and just, you know, making suggestions. And so it is learning to pay attention as kids explore and learning how to read their reactions. Another thing, just kind of an additional point besides looking for where the life is to explore where the freedom is. Because I think that when we live within the bounds of who God has made us to be, there is freedom, there is impact. We know this is true morally. We're wise enough to know that the ways of God, when we live within the bounds of how God calls us to live, there is freedom, there is joy. When we live morally outside of the bounds of how God calls us to live, life talks back to us. I think the same thing is true vocationally. I have done life plans of guys who come in at 40 years old and they sit down in my living room and they will confess to me, I don't think I've lived one day in my skin my whole life and I'm sick of it. I don't want to live into who my dad wants me to be anymore. I want to live the rest of my life congruent with who I am at my core. Can you help me? And those are cool meetings. And so the exploration window has tremendous power. Let me give you one caution about the exploration window. As a kid unique adult and you're engaging kids and you start talking about this stuff, you start kind of sorting out and you look for clues and you begin to recognize patterns, you will find yourself saying this a lot. This will become part of your vocabulary. You know, sweetheart, son, whoever this kid is, you will say this, I don't know, man, it's just too early to tell. I don't know, it's too early to tell. When Landon, my middle kid, was young, he was tortured because of his melancholy temperament and his heaviness in junior high school. And I cannot tell you how many times I sat on his bed at night and he would weep. I mean, moan, weep. And he would say to me, Dad, why am I like this? I hate how I am, talking about his sensitivity and stuff like that. And, you know, I'd sit there. He said, Dad, why am I like this? And I would say to him, Landon, I don't know, buddy. It's too early to tell. But I'm going to tell you this, son. God didn't make a mistake in how he wired you up. There's something really significant and important for you up the road. And I want you to know that I'm not going anywhere I will help you sort this thing out. You're not alone in this thing. So just hang in there. And listen, folks, I'm telling you, I cannot tell you what it feels like as a dad for him to understand today that his power as a grown man when he is right is the very thing that he cursed when he was young. His sensitivity enables him to be a healer. Obviously, he has a really good education, understanding all the system structures of the body and nerves and muscles and all that kind of stuff. But I'm telling you, when he's right, that sense, he has this gift of discernment. He can see right through you. So when he's with people that are hurting, he doesn't just diagnose them physically, but he can see into them, and it helps him be a healer. And so, you know, he tells me, he says, Dad, this is a weird deal in my practice. I don't know how I'm going to build this thing because everybody I work on gets better. Like, they don't come back 15 weeks in a row just to get racked and cracked. I mean, I really help them get better. And I said, that's a good problem. Don't worry about it. And last week he had, I think, 120 patients. I mean, he's flourishing. It's unbelievable. But I can't tell you the emotion that I feel having gone through all of that. Are any of you in the middle of suffering right now with your kids? And man, I don't know, it's too early to tell. And you hang in there with them and you trust God and you watch for insights. And I told Landon, not in a manipulative way, but I said, dude, I'm just telling you, you have a genius that's very rare in how you diagnose stuff. I got to be disciplined. I'll give you one other illustration of this. He was in his second year of chiropractic college, and I'm in Denver speaking. I give him a call, and I said, it was on a Saturday evening. I said, you have a good day? He said, I had a great day. I said, what made your day so great? He said, well, the UTEP football team came up, and they were playing a school in Dallas, and a buddy of mine volunteers to help these guys. So he calls me. He says, come and help us, you know, prep some of these guys before the game. So he said, I go into the locker room, and one of their defensive free safeties had a pain that ran from his hip down into his groin. And they'd done an MRI. They treated him and everything they could. They were just treating him with painkillers right now. So my buddy Dave and I, we kind of assess the guy. We do some minor adjustments. Nothing helps this guy. So I'm over. Dad, I'm doing some cold laser treatment on one of the offensive linemen. And Landon's brain is constantly spinning beneath his kind of cognitive threshold to interconnect disassociated bits of information to give him insights. He has this gift. And he says, I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, oh my gosh. He remembers that there's your back right cranial plate, when it's twisted, it touches a place on your brain, runs down your spine, ends up in your hip. Free safety running your head into people. You could get one of those out of whack. So he shouts out to Dave. He says, Dave, do this adjustment to this guy. So Dave goes over, headlocks the boy, torques his back right cranial plate, and the pain is gone. Like bingo. And he says to me over the phone, he says, Dad, I could do this the rest of my life. And he has no idea in Denver that tears are rolling off my chin. Because, man, I've suffered with that kid. And there is no greater joy than to see your kid walking in the truth of who God's made him to be. Wow, is that sweet. So, the exploration window. A pay attention exercise. I just want you to glance at it if you would. We don't have time to spend any real time with this, but I just want to give you a heads up. Again, in the Kid Unique book, there's 5 really excellent little exercises to help you grow your muscles in this way. And when we think about the exploration window, we want to remind ourselves that we're constantly moving from left to right. We don't want to be in the default zone of no new growth opportunities. We want to do everything we can. I had a guy I had lunch with a while back. He said, Dan, my 15-year-old son, 2 things are interesting about him. He said, number one, my kid reads 400-page books in a day and a half. Number two, he's been nuts about collecting rocks since he was a kid. He says, tell me, what does this mean? Who is my kid going to be? And I said, I don't know. It's too early to tell. I said, I got to write that down. That's good. Those are very interesting insights. What might that mean? I said, what is one thing that you could do with your kid that would help create another experience that would enable him to explore maybe the rock collection side? And he said, it's interesting you say that. Last week, I heard about a camp, I don't know, is it in Montana or Utah, where kids go for a week and they do digs, and they dig up bones and stuff like that and fossils. I said, well, can you afford that? That sounds kind of pricey. He said, yeah, I think we could pop for that. So why don't you throw that by your kid? And so his kid this last summer went to this thing to kind of explore this rock thing. What's that about? And so I haven't had a chance to debrief it. But you try to figure out, if you begin to see something, then you create another experience to see, are we going to confirm that or not? Does that make sense? The exploration window is simple. It's exciting. I love it. Let me share now my favorite window, the affirmation window. Turn to that one. And if I could just scream from the top, you cannot underestimate or overestimate, however you want to say it, the power of affirmation. Affirmation is recognizing that every kid has an upside and a downside. Every kid is a miracle and a mess. Welcome to planet Earth, right? And so for us who love we have to have a big enough love, a strong enough love, a discerning enough love to be able, obviously we want to help our kids grow, but we want to be able to point out to them what's right with them and encourage them in that. Man, I remember when I woke up to the power of affirmation. When I was in 10th grade, I went into high school at 5 feet, 585 pounds. I would roll to class and roll out of class. And, you know, as you can imagine, I had all sorts of girls wanting to date me, you know, which wasn't true. And I went out for every single sport as a high school sophomore. Didn't make a single sport. Dr. David Messenger was my algebra teacher. And he was the manager of the boys' sophomore basketball team, which I went out for and didn't make it. He said to me, he said, Dan, listen, why don't you manage the boys' sophomore basketball team? I said, I don't know, coach. I mean, it sounds like about as exciting as kissing my sister. He said, I'll give you extra credit. I said, how much? And he made me an offer I couldn't refuse, honestly. So I managed the boys' sophomore basketball team. And at Catella High School in Orange County, back in those days, the sophomore team practiced outside on the asphalt court. The JV and varsity practiced in the gym. So when a kid would be sick or hurt, I'd jump on the floor, and I'd just fill a position, and I'd run the floor to help practice go well. Very last practice of the year, the coach says, bag up the balls, come over here. I have a couple things I want to say to you. So I walk over, and I said, what's up, Doc? Sorry, I kind of got a kick out of that. Just flowed. It just came out. So, and he said two things. Number one, I couldn't have done it without you this year. And I said, well, you know, I actually had a good time. He said, you're going to get your extra credit. I said, that's good to hear. And then he said, this is what I really want to say to you, Dan. You're a better athlete than any kid on this team. And, like, when's the punchline coming? Why are you being mean to me? He says, Dan, I'm serious. He said, I've been able to watch you over the year. I didn't see in practice. He said, listen, son. He said, you haven't hit your adolescent growth spurt yet. You're going to. And you got to go out for basketball next year. There's a varsity basketball player inside of you. You know, he was politically correct. He could have said, son, it's under 50 pounds of fat. Come on. You know, he didn't do that. I mean, he affirmed me. And on the strength of his affirmation, and it just happened that, you know, between my sophomore and junior year, Mother Nature hit me with her wand, and I grew up. As a junior, I was co-captain of the team. As a senior, we played for a state championship in the Los Angeles Sports Arena. And I went on to play in college, and I wouldn't have had any of those experiences if it wasn't for that man speaking into my life. It is such a powerful, powerful thing. And you say, well, how do we go about affirming our kids? I wish we had time to see this. It's such a great clip, but we don't. Did you feel moved? I want to honor the time tonight. Listen, we have to identify, and you really wanted to see that, didn't you? It's going to cost you 7 minutes of your life. Are you serious? All right, all right, all right. Listen, you know, I'm flexible. Let me go back. Let me set it up. My favorite television show, they canceled this last year, Friday Night Lights. Coach Eric Taylor, the East and West Dillon, Panthers and Lions. Well, a couple seasons ago, Coach Taylor had an African-American kid who was a lights-out running back. His name was Brian Smash Williams. I don't even remember Smash. Beautiful kid, gifted kid, single-parent home. His mom wanted Brian to go to college so much. There was no chance he was going to go to school if he didn't get a scholarship. Coach Taylor knew that Smash was special. He knew this kid had the potential to go all the way. And as drama presents itself, Smash blows out his knee his senior year. And kind of gave up on himself. And he was working in a small restaurant that had a chain of restaurants. And even as a senior in high school, they recognized leadership ability in him. A guy came and told him, Brian, listen, when you graduate, if you want to stay with us, we'll give you a car and you can manage a number of these restaurants. And that was a great opportunity, but it was still way beneath the kid's potential. And so Coach Eric Taylor would not give up on the kid. And he did everything he could. He loved this kid. He affirmed this kid. He disciplined this kid. He trained him after practice to get his leg back. And then he cashed in all of his influence chips to get Brian a walk-on at Texas A&M. And this clip communicates what I want my life to be about. You'll enjoy this. Watch this. Well, was that worth it? Tell you, man, that feeds my heart. I want my life to be about that kind of stuff right there. We can affirm kids by just verbally saying it. We can write them notes and give them like a record that they can keep and read over and over and over again. We can affirm kids by seeking out positive gossip from other people who bump into the kids that we know and feeding back to them things that we might hear positively about them behind their back. I mean, it's not hard to write these notes. We just have to do it. And they are unbelievably powerful. I'm stunned by how powerful notes are. This is the woman who put her arm around Landon when he was in seventh grade. Her name is Suzanne Van Druen, and she's one of my heroes. She works with learning challenged kids at West Middle School, and she saved Landon's academic life. She taught him how to self-advocate. And she told Landon, listen, you're plenty smart enough. We just have to figure out ways to help you learn. And she did. It was, and I wrote her an affirmative note before he graduated from high school. And I said, Suzanne, I want you to know that during high school graduation next week, I'm going to bow my head during that ceremony and give thanks to God for you, because without you, Landon would have never graduated. When he graduated from college, I sent her another letter, copied the first note, and said, I want you to know at Landon's college graduation, during that ceremony, I'm going to bow my head and give thanks for Suzanne Van Druen, because he would have never got there if you hadn't gotten on his team and helped him. And then when he got his doctorate a couple years back, I sent her a third letter, and I copied her the first two letters, and I said, Suzanne, I want you to know that when he gets his doctorate, there's going to be this prayer of yippee, doo-dah, thank the Lord God Almighty for Suzanne Van Druen coming from this dad's heart. If you hear it from Texas, that's what's going on. And then she wrote me a note back, and she said in her note back to me, she said, you have no idea how much your note meant to me as I read about, you know, the things you said I say to Landon. She said, this last year has been unbelievably difficult, and I was going to retire. She said, I'm way too young to retire. The truth of it is I was quitting. And your letter reminded me that those are the very words I tell kids every day. And she said, I'm back engaged, having the time of my life, telling kids that they can. You know, just so powerful. There are some notes that are just legendary. This is the most legendary affirmation note I have ever received. It is on toilet paper. Just to illustrate how powerful it is. I can't bring it anymore because it's so fragile, so I just scanned it. And I took a kid that I was mentoring. I spoke at an event. He was with me. We stayed overnight in a cabin. The next morning, I get up, I go into the bathroom, and this note is hanging on the toilet paper roll. He took the toilet paper roll, rolled it out, wrote the note, rolled it back up, and hung it up there. I tore it off, and I read it. It says, Dear Dan, I really like this toilet paper. It has Cush, C-U-S-S-S-S-H, and it's soft, much like you and you're dealing with delicate human lives. And also, you're like this toilet paper. You are so good at wiping up messy and awkward situations. And you're always right there ready to be used. Yes, Dan, I would have to say you are just the toilet paper of God in a world of crap. How good is that? I keep that forever. I want that to be in my casket when I die. So we do it. I spoke to all the administrators, teachers at a Collin Christian School District a while back, and afterwards a woman named Miss Berry, who looked familiar, she comes down the aisle. She says, Dan, it's good to see you. I'm Miss Berry. I go, that's who you are. You had all of my sons in the public school system. She said, yeah, I just moved over to teach here a while back. She said, how are your boys doing? No, no, no. How's Luke doing, your oldest son? I mean, Landon and Logan, they're okay. I really like Luke. I mean, Luke, we just really, she was one of the teachers that helped Luke when I was upside down, when we were upside down together. And so she just effused about how they got along and how they talked. And so I'm on the drive home. I call Luke. I said, Luke, you never guess who I saw today. Miss Berry. You know, Miss Berry, she's one of the only teachers who really got me back then as an adult. And I said, I know, man. She said, you are like all that, and she liked you much more than either of your brothers. She said, of course. And I could just feel this little lift that happened in his spirits that day. And so we got to turn affirmation loose. You know, if you were going to look at your, if we had, in the regular workshop, I give everybody small cards, and you actually write an affirmative note. But if you were just going to look on your outline, and you're going to say, what is one thing I can affirm my kid for today? Just write something in there as we make this transition to the last window. And is there someone that you could talk to about the kid you care about that might be able to give you some positive feedback that then you can feed back to them? And just do everything we can to pump air into the spirits of our kids. And that's the affirmation window. And again, we want to move from left to right constantly, negative, only pointing out what's wrong, going through the mind shift change to pointing out what's right. Last window, revelation window, very quickly. I'm guessing you folks don't need a lot of encouragement on this. We understand that the whole Kid Unique process is spiritual in nature, but the revelation window is really leaning into and recognizing and reminding ourselves, listen, God created this kid whom I love and knows him or her far better and is more concerned about their life than I could ever be, really. And so I'm going to turn to the one who has made this kid and cry out for God's help as I engage them. And really, you know, Jesus said, the Holy Spirit is going to be your helper. And when we look through the revelation window, we say, Lord, I need help. Because when you think about all four of these windows, they almost have you circle the kid, because the observation window, you're standing right in front of a kid and you're looking at him or her, trying to see the things you can see. The exploration window, you're behind a kid and you're nudging him or her out. Go out and experience life. Try different things. Let's see what we can learn about you. The affirmation window, you're right beside a kid and you're whispering into his or her ear the things that are right with them. The revelation window, we are on our knees at the feet of a kid crying out to God, please, God, help this kid look towards you and be attentive to you. And help me listen and be discerning. In the scripture, we find 133 times this phrase, the Lord spoke to. And as silly as it sounds, honestly, all of us are looking for number 134 when it has to do with our kid. And we are. We're trying to sort that thing out. We're trying to hear little whispers. We're not trying to do spirit abuse. We're not trying to, you know, say things that aren't true. But we find all throughout the scripture that there was a time when an angel came to Gideon, who was part of the, you know, small tribe, and the Midianite army was kicking rear on the Israelites. And so an angel comes to Gideon, who's hiding in this wine press room. And the very first thing the angel says to Gideon is, behold, O valiant warrior. And Gideon says, excuse me? Behold, O valiant warrior. What? I'm like of the smallest tribe? What do you mean? The angel is kind of saying to Gideon, dude, listen. The one who made you sent me to tell you who you are. Now, you are valiant warrior. Live into that. As more mature people, spiritual people, we get insights, and we are able to communicate to a kid in a reverent way. Listen, I really believe that God, boom. When I was cutting my teeth doing student ministry in Southern California, there was a Christian ed director of the church that I was a part of. His name is Dr. Ken Van Wyk, and he was very generous to me. When I moved on and kind of separated from that church and did some other things and built two very significant large student ministries, after all those years later, I come back and I happen to bump into Ken Van Wyk. And Ken Van Wyk says, you know, so excited about what God's done in and through your life. And I said, you know, that's an amazing thing, isn't it? He said, I always knew there was something about you. I said, what? He said, yeah, God kind of whispered to me, you know, decades ago that there was something special about you. And I felt angry. I said, why didn't you tell me that you had that inkling, that intuition from God? He said, I don't know. You just always kind of seem secure. I didn't think you need it. I said, are you kidding me? Do you know how insecure I feel all the time and question? And how much of this stuff is by faith? And you have any idea, Ken, what it would have meant if you had looked, stepped towards me and said, Dan, I really think, oh my gosh, it would have made my year. He said, I had no idea. I said, Ken, will you promise me right now, just now that we're both grown men, if you ever get an inkling like that, an insight that you have seen confirmed over time, will you please speak it to a kid? Give me your word. And he said, all right, man, all right, I will. And I just thought, golly, God help us. I mean, if God gives you an insight into your kid and it gets confirmed over time, man, step into him and speak truth to him. Wow, is that powerful. So we got to listen, and we have to learn from all sorts of different people. Now, close your eyes just for a second. You didn't see that. We don't have time for that one. That was Mike Singletary at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. You can get the audio tapes of this whole thing. You can hear all this stuff. So if you were going to ask yourself, have I gotten any whispers? And if I was going to write a prayer for my kid, what would I ask for this kid? These are great exercises to do. So in the revelation window, we're trying to move from left to right, from prayerless and God non-involved to us engaging God's help and encouraging our kid to look heavenward too. Now, in the last couple minutes, I want to make a turn. And I just ask for your grace because I know I'm skimming over some of these things. But I want to talk about the last thing in your handout is this resentment assessment, which is so critical. And I want to tell you how Luke and I healed our relationship. Because I'm just guessing in a room this size, some of you might be slamming heads against a kid. And obviously, if you've got a teenage kid that you really long to be close to engage with their life, to help them sort out who they are, if they're angry at you, if they're resentful towards you, good luck. It's not happening, is it? Your spirits are going to be like this. So as I told you, Luke went through this whole thing, and we were like 1,000 miles apart for over a year period of time, and Luke was threatening to move out of the house at age 17. So honestly, I just thought, I got to man up and do the right thing. This is ridiculous. What is the matter with you, Dan? So I go to Luke, and I said, come on, get in the car, let's go. So we go, and we go to a really quiet restaurant. We sit in a corner booth, and he's, sitting, kind of slides down in the booth like this. And even I could discern he had some resentment. So I said, oh, man, Luke, I hate where we are right now. I know you can't like it either. He kind of shrugged his shoulders. And I said, I'm your dad. I'm always going to be your dad. You're my son. You're always going to be my son. I want a much better relationship than we have. And I know you're pissed off at me, man. And I should have done what I'm going to do right now a long time ago. But I'm showing up today. Luke, I just need you to say to me whatever you need to say to me. And he looked at me and he said, you don't want to hear what I have to say to you. I said, well, I'm pretty sure you're right, that I don't want to hear what you have to say to me. I said, but I know if we don't begin to talk, we're going to stay in this cold war, and I hate this, man. I hate this. And so you say whatever you have to say to me, however long it takes, and I'm going to listen. I'm not going to defend myself, and we're just going to start over. He said, all right. He said, here's the first thing. Every time you've talked to me in the last 6 months, you talked down to me. He said, the second thing is I'm so effing tired of being the son of a perfect father, I want to barf. Third thing is if you knew the darkness that lived in my heart, Dad, you wouldn't even want me to be your son. That's where we began. And that opened the door for him to be able to say and for us to begin to sort, for me to own, for him to own. You see, even though, he wasn't very attentive to God back then, He believed the same thing King David did in Psalm 101, verse 6, when David said, my eyes will be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. The person who walks in a blameless way, the person with integrity, is the one who will minister to me. I was not blameless in my relationship with my son. He wasn't going to let me draw close to him, when there was this resentment. And so that talk led to another talk, led to understanding, led to ownership, led to confession, led to forgiveness. And we have an unbelievable relationship today. And if you sense your kid's spirit is a long way from yours, it probably is. And so in order to move back in that direction, we got to do the resentment assessment. And very simple steps. I mean, this is not rocket science. It just takes a lot of courage to do. Here's what I did. You got to lead. You got to acknowledge the problem and that you're part of the problem. You got to own it. Second thing is that I invited honest sharing and listen. Don't shame. Don't tell the kid. Just listen. Don't judge what they feel. Number three, allow them to have their perspective. They may not, their perspective may be 90% askew, but it's their perspective right now. And then four, apologize for the hurt that you know you have inflicted or the neglect. And then ask for another chance and then demonstrate renewed interest and move ahead. And when you do that, I know when I did that, it took some time, but it joined our hearts back together. It is an unbelievable gift when a kid allows you to get close and gives you the privilege to speak into their life. And then in the end, you see your kids walking in truth. Wow. I mean, how cool would it be if every single one of us had like the compass in our brain torqued and so we never looked at kids the same way again? Every kid that walks by, we just, ooh, what do I see? I wonder what that kid's experiencing. I wonder what lights that kid up. What can I affirm in that kid? God, do you have anything for me to say? How cool would that be? Think of the hundreds and thousands of kids that would come out of this church and these families that would walk into the future the way God wants them to. Wouldn't that be sweet? And to that end is why I've been here cheering you guys on tonight. And we are only 2 minutes over. Ooh, all right, don't get excited. We got to pray. We got another couple minutes here. Applying Kids Unique, some just very simple things. You can take some small steps, have the resentment talk, write a what's right with you letter, do the 31-day experience, do a small group. There's all sorts of simple steps you can do to move in the direction of applying something tonight. Some of you, you know, get the book, man. Work through it. Get better at these windows and develop that. And if you do, that would be great. There is a inserted feedback form. If you'd like to give me some feedback, let me know if I have a reason to live for another day. Love for you to fill that out and hand it off at the product table in the back. If you want some additional information on life planning or some of these other things I just kind of skimmed, or if you're in the school district and you'd love to see a Kid Unique thing happen for teacher training, you know, however I might serve you in the future, be great. I really like this place called Phoenix. Love to come back if I could serve you in any way. Let me pray, and then I think Mike's going to come up wherever you are right there. Okay. All right. Father, many of us, you know, sit before you right now, and boy, we feel a heaviness in our chest, Lord, because, we're either alienated or we just feel sad that we haven't been heads up in our parenting or in our care for kids around us. And Father, collectively, we all exhale and we thank you for your grace. And we ask that you would cleanse us and forgive us, and that you would nudge each one of us kind of that next small incremental step in our love and devotion and discipleship with you, and also that next step in our relationship with the kids that you have spoken to us and said, get on the team of that kid. And so, Father, please strengthen us, continue to grow us, surround us with people that are on the same page that can call the best out of us. And God, we pray this for the sake of our children who you love so deeply. And we want to see all that you've created them to be come to fruition. And so, Lord, please just apply this in each of our lives, depending where we are with the age of kids and our relationship with them. But help us to move ahead in this. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
You've been listening to the Mission 6-8 podcast. Follow us at twitter.com/mission68 and facebook.com/mission68. Mission Community Church. Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly.